You're on. I was recently interviewed on the David Lichtenstein show of Headlines in Halakha on the subject of Mesira. I don't know how many people listened to it. Okay.
Actually, I did.
You did?
My son gave me that.
Oh, all right. It's fine. So I was thinking that this seems to be on people's minds, and also, it's what we're up to, because we're trying to approach Chosha Mishpah from the very beginning in a more lumdisha fashion. So after Siman Aleph, which is what we dealt with last time, that dealt with the Shlichusayu and the whole concept of what does it mean conceptually that Beis Din nowadays has jurisdiction as a continuation of the Bati Din and the certified Dayanim of yesteryear, which is a major sugya in Siman Aleph of Choshen Mishpat. So now I wanted to focus on Siman Beis of Choshen Mishpat. So Siman Beis is about the ability of Beis Din to carry out criminal jurisdiction, to inflict punishments and penalties that may not necessarily coincide with that which the Torah actually permits the Beis Din to do. If you think about it, Beis Din nowadays really shouldn't have any kind of criminal jurisdiction, because the Gemara indicates that when the Sanhedrin was exiled from the Yun Chamber, from the Lishkas Hagozis in the Beis HaMikdash, that since it's become Tava, Lisa Lamakom, Hamakom Gorim, you need to have the Sanhedrin in that particular place in order to carry out capital punishment, in order to be able to have jurisdiction to impose penalties in criminal proceedings, whether it be makos, whether it be capital punishment. So nowadays, Beis Din really shouldn't have the ability to carry out those tasks. When it comes to makos, there's a separate consideration that we're just not smoking nowadays, that when Shlichusayu, the ability of Beis Din to continue the jurisdiction of the old Dayanim was given to us, it was only given in the monetary realm of things that are Shchiach, things that happen all the time, V'yesh Bem Kisar and Kis, and where you are just providing restitution for a monetary loss that a person would otherwise suffer. But we certainly don't have the ability to inflict makos or to impose a capital punishment. So therefore, Siman Beis comes along and says, even nowadays, when we can't do any of those things, sometimes we can in an extrajudicial fashion. And the Rishonim have stories. The Rosh has a story about a woman who was involved in promiscuous relationships, and they cut off her nose to spite her face, so that she wouldn't be able to continue to present herself in that fashion. I mean, all kinds of very interesting stories of where they actually killed people because the time and the circumstances required that type of drastic action. So that has as its source a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which we'll start with. But what I want to illustrate tonight is how this entire sugya, Makin Ve'onshin Shalom Min HaDin, actually relates to the authority of, number one, a Beis Din to be able to inflict capital punishment and corporal penalties and the like as a criminal, as having criminal jurisdiction. But as a result, it also is a source of the notion that any kind of governmental entity has the ability to exercise criminal jurisdiction. And the fact that Beis Din has this authority is really an extension of every single government's authority to exercise criminal jurisdiction. Because you can't have a complete and a comprehensive justice system unless you're able to preside over both civil law and criminal law. If you don't have criminal jurisdiction, then the entire society is going to have a lack of law and order. And it's going to, I'm sorry? Okay, it's going to be unable to have any kind of a kiyum, any kind of a lasting impact in terms of holding society together. So the first source, Gemara Sanhedrin, says, Tanya Rabbi Yezeb and Yaakov Omer, Shemati Shebeistin Makim Ba'onshin Shalom Min HaTorah. I've heard that Beistin has the ability to give lashes and otherwise punish, even though the Torah may not warrant it. Lo Labo Divrei Torah, not to go against the Torah, but in order to strengthen the Torah. Here's an example. In the days of the Yevanim, we just finished celebrating Hanukkah. There was somebody who was riding on a horse on Shabbos, which is a rabbinic prohibition. It's not a Torah prohibition for which one would get stoned, would get the punishment of skila from a bezdin. They view the bezdin, nonetheless, they brought this person to bezdin, it's kalu, and they stoned him anyway. Not because he really deserved it, according to strict Torah law. It's just that the circumstances of the time require this type of a harsh penalty. And then it gives another example of a person in relations with his wife in public, and they gave him malchus in Bezdin, not because that's really the penalty, it was his wife after all, but because it was in public, so therefore it was a shameful act, and hashashat tzvika lekach was rampant promiscuity, and that had to be nipped in the bud, and therefore they gave the person malchus. So this is all codified in the Shulchan Aruch. In Siman Beis, it says, kol Bezdin, and here is the key, afilu einam smuchim beretz Yisrael, even if it does not have smicha, and would not otherwise have the authority based on the Shlichusayu concept that we spoke about last time, nonetheless, it has the ability to exercise criminal jurisdiction as a matter of extrajudicial authority in order to maintain law and order in society. Now, here, look at the next line. Here is our introduction to the notion of utilizing the civil court system in order to ensure that there be appropriate criminal supervision over those who are acting wrongly in society. If you're dealing with a very strong, armed, imposing, intimidating personality, like a gangster in your midst, so then you recruit the non-Jews, this could be the non-Jewish courts, you recruit the non-Jews to carry out the criminal punishment. And any kind of measure can be taken in order to patch the things up in society so that there not be a rampant violations of law and order. Now, and everything has to be done for the sake of heaven. So the Mechaber says this can only be done by the Gedolei Hador, only by the Gedolei Hador, those who are the giants of the generation, or Tuveir Shimkun Bezdin Aleihem, or the leader, the leading members of society who are authorized and delegated by Bezdin to serve in this role. Ramah says that the leaders of the community can serve in this function, a makin ba'onshin, that they can impose a punishment. And he says that even though there are those who say that there is no special power of the Tuvei Ya'ir to act in such an autonomous fashion when it comes to these matters, nonetheless, says the Ramah a few lines later, whatever is the custom in the city in terms of allocating this type of authority and responsibility is considered to be binding as a matter of halacha, and certainly if the people have accepted the Bezdin for this purpose. So this actually used to be done by Batei Din. Even in Europe, you had Batei Din that would exercise this type of criminal authority because the government would actually give to the autonomous Jewish communities the authority and the ability to apprehend and to punish as they saw fit the criminals who were in their midst. It wasn't necessary to only hand over criminal matters to the secular court system. As far as the government was concerned, some of the Jewish communities were autonomous little units, and it was okay for the leaders of those communities to carry out these extraordinary measures, even though, technically speaking, according to Torah law, we wouldn't have had that authority. Nonetheless, we have a precedent from the Gemara that, to the extent necessary, we are given that authority. The Torah even mentions, if you look in Source Gimel, that one of the things that a Bezdin would be permitted to do under such circumstances is Ula Osro Bebeis HaAsurim, would be even to throw somebody in jail. We know that the Bezdin, for example, in Eretz Yisrael, to the extent that they're given jurisdiction by the government, they have the ability to throw people in jail. They'll sometimes do that with recalcitrant husbands who refuse to give a wife to get to their wife. They will throw the husband in jail. They have that ability. We don't have that ability, but sometimes we really wish that we had the ability to throw people in jail. Not just recalcitrant husbands, all kinds of people who walk through my door. I would love to be able to throw them in jail, but we don't have that authority. But nonetheless, really, we could have had...
You have that basement.
We do, yes. Okay, well, something to consider.
We already have coats.
However, right, okay, but the best then, technically speaking, if a government would delegate that type of authority to the best, then the best then, Api Halakha, could carry out these different measures. And we have our first glimpse of the notion that for purposes of carrying out these types of measures, it could be appropriate to go to the secular courts, meaning that it's possible that the secular courts are not viewed so much from the standpoint of halacha as being the enemy, shall we say, in terms of handing over criminals to them, but they could be a source for good, that we want to be able to apprehend and punish criminals. If you have a just government that is following whatever protocols we think are appropriate, so then that's actually helpful to our cause. Either that they would delegate to that type of responsibility to us, or if for whatever reason we don't have that type of responsibility, but we can turn to them and say, please carry out what we think is appropriate. So that's similar to what it says in the Gemara, to the Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah in Gittin says that if you have somebody who is refusing to give a get to his wife, that's the classic case that's described over there, then if the Beis Din rules, the husband must give a get, and it's even okay to beat him up to give his wife a get, so then you can go to the secular courts, and it's okay for the secular courts to beat the guy up and say, Osimashi sol omimcha, do what the Beis Din wants you to do, and if he gives a get based on that action of the civil courts, that would be a kosher get. And that's what the Torah says. In the very first one, he says, this is the third line in the Torah. In the Torah over here, in Hilchos Dayanim Siman Beis, and they say, do that which the Jewish court is telling you to carry out. Now, what is this based upon? What is the source of this authority, of this concept, this Gemara? We know the source. The Gemara says, Makim Onchin Shlomin Adin. But what's the svara behind it? What's the rationale? Is there a pasuk? Is there a svara? What is it based on? Yes?
Even without that, if we don't have power because we don't have smicha, what about from the Shevet Dinim? Does that not apply to Israel unless they have smicha? How do we fulfill Dinim if we don't have smicha?
Dinim is a special law that refers to any government, shall we say.
Right.
Okay, but we're not a government, we're a community. Okay,
well, so if we have a Jewish government.
If we have a Jewish government, so then we have a responsibility to have... then we have a responsibility to have a court system, a Beis Din system. He's saying, what about when it comes to criminal justice, if we don't have a Sanhedrin?
Is it from Sinan?
The same question. It's the same question. Where does it come from? If we don't have a Beis Din of Smuchim, we don't have certified Dayanim, what gives us that authority? It's the same question. Really, you're asking the same question.
So the answer might be,
so the answer is, or some variation. There are Dinim is a law that goes to the B'nai Noach. And Dinim really... when you dinim has to do with the notion of a civil law, that you have to have a monetary system of a law that governs relationships between people and contracts and the like. That's really, you know, what that's part and parcel of, you know, when we speak about dinim, it's mostly in the realm of civil law. It's true that, you know, the Rambam speaks about dinim, that you have to have, you know, a criminal court system as well to punish the offenders. Like, he talks about the whole story of Dina and Shechem, that there was a lack of fulfillment of dinim. But if we're going to say that, you know, that's the halacha, that if, with respect to non-Jews, with us, we don't call that dinim. We call that, you know, we're supposed to have a certain, you know, criminal mecca, with certain criminal laws in place that depend upon having dayanim smukim and depend upon having a Sanhedrin. That's, you know, our... for us, it's not necessarily the same in every single generation.
Way.
It doesn't apply to us in the same way because we have the requirement of dayanim smuchim if we're going to impose capital or corporal punishment. So let's just get to reason number one. The Beis Yosef gives reason number one why we would be able to apply this authority nowadays. He says, If I have people who are appointed, he's talking about a community that appoints people to oversee the punishment of criminal offenders within the Jewish community. He says that, okay, let's say you have witnesses who come along. What's considered to be sufficient evidence? He says, if you are satisfied that the crime has been committed, even if not all of the prerequisites of Jewish law have been technically satisfied. I'm sorry, like all of those things. So Shaim Haim Liknos Mamon Olanosh Onesh Agup Kepi Ashir Yir Lehem, and says the Rashba, and this is a critical line, Vizem Mekiyam Olam. He says that this is in order to sustain the world. This is in order to be able to sustain the community. You have to have, you know, what does the Mishnah say? The Malay Marash Malkos Ishes Meo Chayim Bula'o, right? You need to have some type of a fear of a criminal authority in the community in order for people to be law-abiding and not to just swallow each other up alive. Because if you follow on the strict technicalities required by the Torah, if you followed all of those strict technicalities, then the world would just be destroyed. Because you would need two kosher witnesses every single time. You would need the hasra, as you just mentioned, as Dr. Jason just mentioned. You would need all of these warnings. And he, interestingly, he applies a Gemara, one second, he applies a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says, Yerushalayim was only destroyed because everybody insisted applying the strict letter of the law. Now, if you look at that Gemara, it appears that it's talking about in a monetary sense, that people didn't engage in pshara, they didn't make compromises with each other when they had monetary disputes. The Rashba takes that Gemara and he applies it, interestingly, in a criminal context. And he says, it also means that you can't stand on the letter of the law to require all of the technical prerequisites in order to be able to punish criminal offenders, because otherwise society would not be able to stand, you would not be able to sustain society. So the Rashba gives that as an explanation. And here's where, I'm just going to finish the base Yosef and then I'll take your question. Here's where he segues into the sugya of Mesira. Remember, I promised you that there's going to be a connection between this sugya and the sugya of Mesira. He quotes as a proof for this notion the Gemara in Bava Metzia about Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. It says at the end, the last line on the page, the kosh came to Ika Hormina de Malka. And certainly, if you're given the authority from the local government, Ukinyan Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, just as Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon was given the authority by the government to serve as kind of an assistant district attorney to apprehend criminals. He was apprehending Jewish criminals. But the government, the local non-Jewish government, designated him, they appointed him to be the person who was going to catch, apprehend, and arrest all of the Jewish criminals. Now, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon was apprehending the Jewish criminals, and he wasn't handing them over to the Jewish Dayanim in the Beis Din. He was handing them over to the non-Jewish government. Says the Rashba, quoted by the Beis Yosef, this is the same thing. The idea of Beis Din exercising this type of authority is the same thing. We need to see to it that Beis Din serves this governmental function of maintaining law and order. If the Beis Din is not going to do it, so it needs to get done anyway. If there's a Hormina de Malka, there's a governmental authorization that gives the Beis Din the authority to do it, then it's our responsibility. If the government says, we're not giving you criminal jurisdiction, you're not going to be able to chop people's noses off, you're not going to be able to give people lashes, you're not going to be able to put people in jail, so then it becomes the governmental responsibility. Then it's our responsibility to see to it that people are properly handed over to the government. So you all should kind of like thinking to yourselves, wait a second, isn't this exactly what we're trying to avoid? Isn't that the problem of Mesira, that we're not supposed to hand people over to the government because that would be a prohibition of informing on individuals to the government, which is one of the worst sins that you could possibly commit. So how is this an extension of the idea of Makim Onshin Shlomo Nidin? So we're going to have to figure that out. But you had a question.
Yeah, not dealing with the specific subject matter, but just the lumbus that's being used, that, well, if the Dine Torah don't address this to the need, to the scope that it needs to be addressed in order to function in society, so we're going to step in and we're going to read it slightly different. Isn't that a bit of a slippery slope? to say, okay, we're doing this with criminal law. The Dine Torah don't really address the criminal law. We need to function.
Dine Torah do address criminal law. They do address
criminal
law. But if we're going to require all of the technical requirements of Edom and Asra and so forth, then a lot of criminals are never going to be punished.
I'm sorry, let me ask the question different. I apologize. Let me ask you, I didn't mean to, Pastor Shalom. They're there, but we're not going to require the technicalities because it's not realistic in a society, especially when we're in Gaulis, we don't have a Sanhedrin, and we need to function as a society. Doesn't that become a slippery slope then for someone else saying, well, we need X, Y, Z in society because that's where society is. So even though we can't meet all of the Torah's requirements, we're going to go ahead and kind of impose what it is we feel we need to impose for society.
It's a very slippery slope. And that's why the Torah, when the Torah discusses these Dittim, if you go back for a moment to Source Gimel, so he ends up saying, don't think that you could just run slipshod over everybody and impose an unreasonable criminal justice system. It has to be reasonable because you have to fundamentally have compassion for the people who are the citizens of society, for all of the B'nai Avam, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov, to whom you're supposed to love and you're supposed to have compassion for, and you're not supposed to impose something which is oppressive upon them. You want to be able to preserve law and order, but the purpose is not to oppress individuals, so it is a slippery slope. You have to be very, very careful in that balancing.
But it's a slippery slope in other ways as well. So, for example, and I'll just use a crazy example.
Okay.
We get to a place where Jews are just living 50 miles apart from each other, and it's not practical for a minyan to convene on Shabbat. So somebody could come in and take this rationale and say, we need to have Jews. We can't have a society where the Torah is not being read.
Rennie says it's not lava of divrei Torah. None of this is to violate any Torah principle.
I'm not saying we should. I'm just saying
this
somebody
is in order to just see to it that because the Torah itself says, Bezin is makim v'onchi shlominitim. We have to understand it's by saying lo lava of divrei Torah, and not to have people, you know, eat trafe or not keep Shabbos or anything like that. It's in order to strengthen the observance of Torah. We see that people are stealing. We see that people are committing adultery. We see that people are murdering. So we have to stop them from violating Torah, and therefore you can take extrajudicial measures along those lines. We see people are violating Shabbos, so therefore we're going to crack down even on people who are dressed or riding on a horse on Shabbos, which is only an issur d'rabbanan, and we're going to impose a harsh punishment. That's what we're talking about.
But you can't give the punishment d'oraisa when they are not over on the mitzvah d'oraisa.
So saying if it's in
they
order
give a different
to
punishment.
You can ideally a different punishment. Although if you look at that case of the person riding on the horse, so they gave skila, but that is a different punishment because the person really would not otherwise have received skila for that particular act. So therefore, you have to come up with something which is clearly extrajudicial. And that's based on Gemaras that talk about how you're supposed to impose something which is different, so you'll see that they're acting in an extrajudicial fashion, an extraordinary fashion.
The Migdam Milsa. Clear on one point here.
Yes.
In terms of turning the null person over, do you have to go through the Beis Din first and then turn them over?
Let's discuss that. Let's go through. We have to figure out what the rationale is, right? So let's take a look at Source Hay. So Source Hay talks about this very story that's alluded to by the Rashba of Rabbi Elazar of Rabbi Shimon, that the government, the local government, saw that he was really, really good at being able to recognize who were the crooks, who were the people who were stealing in the middle of the night in society. So he taught the local policeman how to identify who were the criminals who were sleeping at night. He gave a whole methodology, and they were really, really impressed by him. So go to four lines from the bottom. Ishtama Milsa Beimalka, people heard how unbelievably good Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon was at identifying the crooks among the Jewish people. So they said, since he's the one who read the letter, so to speak, so he's the one who should carry out the dictates of the letter, meaning he's the one who figured out how to apprehend criminals, let's appoint him as a district attorney. So
Pinchas.
Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, sorry?
Pinchas.
Like Pinchas, that's where you find that phrase elsewhere. So they called in Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, and they appointed him and be a district attorney. Like one of my sisters was an assistant district attorney in Queens, New York for a number of years. Now she's a very capable real estate attorney in Beit Shemesh, but she did this for a while. So she had asked me at the time, is it better to be a legal aid attorney? She wants to go into public service. To be a legal aid attorney? or to be a district attorney.
Is this Linda?
This is Linda. Yes, okay. So I told you at the time that I thought it was better to be a district attorney to apprehend criminals because there's a fulfillment of the Yartzara Mikibecha as opposed to defending, you know, people who might otherwise be guilty and getting them off on loopholes, which some of the post-game have difficulty with. Which didn't really make a difference because the victims today were the criminals tomorrow and the criminals today were the victims tomorrow. It was all the same people every single day. But anyway, so Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon was acting in his function as district attorney. So Shachar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha Chometz Binyayin, Rabbi Shimon Yekorcha got angry at him, said, your father was such an upstanding citizen, he was like Yayin, and you have spoiled the barrel, you become like Chometz, like vinegar, on Masayat HaMoser Amosho Kenala Hariga. You're giving over the Jewish people to be killed because they're being apprehended as criminals and their punishment would be capital punishment. So Shach Lei, so he said, he said, I am simply eradicating the thorns from the vineyard. So Shach Lei, Yevo Balakem, Yechalas Kotzav, led to the owner of the vineyard eradicate his own thorns. In other words, you could leave that to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's not something that you should technically be doing. And then the Gemara tells a similar story of Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yossi, how he also acted similarly, and Eliyahu Hanavi used to come and visit him, was upset at him. He said, well, even if they ask you to do this, you should run away somewhere. So the Rishonim ask, what is the upshot of the Gemara? Is this something which is appropriate or not appropriate? So both the Rashba and the Ritva say, it's perfectly appropriate. It's just not a Midas, it's just not a Mishnas Chasidim. It's not something for people on the high caliber of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi. So maybe it's something they should refrain from doing, and that's why Rabbi Shua ben Korcha got upset at Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. But technically speaking, there's nothing wrong with it. And if somebody's not on a high exalted level, like those two Tanayim, it would be perfectly permissible to serve in this type of capacity. So what is the Gemara getting at? This sounds like Masiva. It sounds like you're handing people over. So the Dvar Avram, the Kovnerov, has a tshuva in which he discusses this in Chelek Aleph Siman Aleph, the very first tshuva in all of the Shailos of Tshuvas, the Dvar Avram. So he talks about all the parameters of Dina D'Malchus Adina. And one of the parameters of Dina D'Malchus Adina, he says, really stems from this Gemara. Which Gemara? The first Gemara. The Gemara of Makim Ve'onshin Shalom Min Adin. He says, this idea, Makim Ve'onshin Shalom Min Adin, where does it come from? He says that, generally speaking, for a Bezdin to carry out criminal jurisdiction, they have to be smuchin. But nowadays, the Bati Din are not smuchin. Rather what? Go three lines down, towards the end of the line, Eladi'i Yislu Hormina Demalka, rather, if they have it, Hormina Demalka, missing letter over there, Ladun Dinei Nefashah, Skepi Dinei Yisrael, Nira Loma, Shekol Dinei Nefashah, Shedinei Am Chayamisa, Mitzad Din Hamalkos, Vedinei No Gamkin Chayamisa, if there is punishment according to the Dinim of the Umos, Ha'olam, of the government which we live in, and we also would consider a particular act to be punishable. So then, it can, the Bezdin, is able to exercise jurisdiction. He says, where does that come from? Fascinating. He says, it comes from Dina D'Malchus Adina. Not just in order to maintain law and order in society. This is an extension of Dina D'Malchus Adina, meaning that the idea of being able to regulate a criminal system is part of the responsibilities of any government, and that government can delegate to Hormina D'Malka, it's like a delegation of the kingdom, they can delegate that authority to the heads of the Jewish community, and that is how the Bezdin is able to carry out this function. In other words, it's not something which is extraordinary like a Harosh Shah or something which contravenes the laws of the Torah. No. It's a fulfillment of a particular law of the Torah. What law is that? It's the law of Dina D'Malchus Adina, meaning it's part of the Mishpatei HaMelucha, part of the laws that the Torah gives over for kings, like Mishpat HaMelech, for the kings to be able to run society in a way in which they're going to preserve some type of order and cohesion in society. And which is the other Gemara that he cites? Fascinating. The other Gemara that he cites is the Gemara that we just read. As it says, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi were delegated for this purpose. This is an extension, says the Dvar Avraham, of the idea and concept of Makim Ve'onshin Shalom Min Adin. We have just tied it all together. The Ritva, he quotes the Ritva, who says, how could they have served in this capacity to turn over these criminals? They were not collecting two Edim. You look at the story of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, he was identifying different ways you could look at a person in a tavern and figure out that they stole the previous night. This wasn't with Edim or Hasva. Shalom is Manas Sanhedrin, there are no Smuchin. Shiny Akka, the Shliach the Malkahu, but they're acting as a Shikos of the Malkahu. Medina Malkahu, Slaugu, Belo Edim, Hasra, the Yasa Olam. And the king is allowed to do this. Velzelo Shaya Kotam, and this has nothing to do with most of the reasons of Dina de Malkusa. So where does it come from? This is one of the laws of the Malucha, Shekema Tzinim and Malka Yisrael, just like we find that David HaMelech could punish people if they violated the words of the king, they were Moed B'Malkus, so there is that right for the king, for the kingdoms all over the world as well. Just as Bezdin is able to carry out punishments, even when it comes to physical punishments, when they wouldn't otherwise have criminal jurisdiction, and this extends to the Umos HaOlam as well. This is all part of the Mishpatei HaMalucha. So we have a different perspective of this, that there is a right of a Malchus to have a criminal justice system. So wait a second, if there is a right of a Malchus to have a criminal justice system, and this is where the authority comes from, we speak about Makim Ve'onshin, Shalom Minadin, it's like an extension of this Dina de Malchus, the Dina function, so why then is it ever prohibited to hand people over to the government? So let's take a look at the laws of Mesira for a moment, okay? This is source number 7, Baba Kama. This is where we find this idea of Mesira. There are two people who are fighting with each other over a shusa, over a bathhouse or something, and one of them gave over the other individual to the Pahagana de Malka, to some emissary of the kingdom, and saying, okay, I'm going to turn you over to the governmental authorities because I'm trying to protect what legally and rightfully really belongs to me. So Abaye said, what's wrong with that? He's trying to protect his own turf. So Rabbi said, really? That's not right. We put him in Cherim. Because he has to really utilize our own court system. He shouldn't utilize their court system. Gemara then tells another system, that he was going to turn over some of the possessions of his chaver to the government. And he came in front of Rav, and Rav said that you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to give over your friend's possessions to the government. He said, I'm going to do it anyway. And Rav Kahana broke his neck and killed him. So the Gemara indicates that it was okay to kill this individual. Why? He was going to maser his friend to the government. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Yishayahu that whenever you do that, it's like a kukaso mechmar. It's like an antelope that gets caught in a hunter's trap. Once he falls into the trap, a merakim in a love, the hunter has no pity or mercy upon the antelope. So too, if you have money of a Yisrael that falls into the hands of Novi Kukharim, there's not going to be any mercy from the standpoint of the government. So what are we talking about? Are we talking about where the government was entitled to the money, where the person did something wrong? So the Rosh explains what this is. So the Rosh says that the problem is that when you're dealing with a nasim, you're dealing with an unjust government, and you're dealing with bandits and gangsters, and you're going to give over stuff to them. So then, since they're going to unjustly take advantage of any assets that come into their possession, or any Jewish person who is turned over to them, and they're going to find a pretense to take money from that person that they're not entitled to, they're going to find the pretense to kill that person. So therefore, the problem with being a moser is that you're like a rodef. It's like you're running after somebody to kill them, and the halacha is the kol abala hagikash game lahargo, that if somebody tries to kill you, you have the right to go and kill them. So therefore he says that there is a right to kill a rodev. Turn to the next page 3. Okay, so says the Rosh, even though we don't have the right to carry out capital punishment nowadays, we do have the right to protect ourselves from future harm. Capital punishment means somebody committed a crime and we're putting them to death. However, you're allowed to punish, penalize people in a way that will prevent them from doing something in the future. And if that means you have to kill them based on losamon adam riecha, it's like a case of rodef, so then you have the right to kill them based on this idea. Therefore, a moser you're allowed to kill, like the story that we just read of Kahana, who killed somebody who was going to master somebody else's possessions, and therefore that is perfectly permissible. And he says you're even allowed to hand them over to, and this is very interesting, he says, you can hand over the Moser to a non-Jewish government or authority. Why is that? We just speaking about the whole problem. What the Moser is doing is that he wants to hand somebody over to a non, you know, Jewish authority. So the Rush says that no, the idea is that the Moser is handing over to like a bandit or a gangster or a sort of an unjust government. If you then use a non-Jew, and it could be a just non-Jewish government, in order to stop this person in their tracks, so that is an appropriate way to stop a Moser. So the problem with the Moser, it seems, is not so much that the Moser is turning over to the government. The problem with the Moser is that the Moser knows that there are these people who are out to take all of the Jewish, all the money of the Jews, and the Moser says, oh, you know, this Jew happens to have a lot of money, and then this bandit, you know, figures out a way to steal all the money or to kill the Jew in order to take all of his money. That's the problem with the Moser. It's not that there's intrinsically a problem going to the government. It's only if the government happens to be an unjust government. Okay, let's go on. Take a look at source number 9. Source number 9 in the Gemara in Gittin, Dav Zayin, Amin Alp, talks about the story of Ma'ukva. Ma'ukva complained to Rabbi Elazar, there are people who are really giving me a hard time, and I have the ability to turn them over to the local, to the Malchus, to the kingdom, and have these people punished. So Rabbi Elazar responded to him, they quoted him a pasuk, and he said, even though there is wickedness against you, you have to put your mouth to your, you have to muzzle your mouth and not cause trouble. But he says, but they're really, really making my life miserable, and I can't figure out how to stop them. So Shaklay, no, you should just be silent and pray to Hashem, and Hashem will take care of it. Go to the base medrash, and they will be destroyed by themselves. So once Rabbi Elazar said this, that this individual who was causing Rabbi Ma'ukva a lot of tzaros was apprehended by the government without Ma'ukva's intervention at all, and he was sent away to the gallows. So it seems from here that handing over to a government is a violation of Mesira. It's not something that you're supposed to do. Says the Rambam. The Rambam says, no. It depends on the circumstances. And he has a very interesting juxtaposition. Let's read the Rambam. This is the Rambam, Hilchos Chovel Mazik Periches. He says, Asa Moser Asher Zama Masa Yirali Sha'asa Lahargo. He says that you can't rush to kill somebody who's a maser, who's a masering, who's giving away a person's money and identity to the bandits. Elim can hook suck limsor, unless this person was already a recidivist. He was already somebody who regularly engaged in this activity. Then you can kill him. Because maybe then he would, if you don't, he's going to do this to others and it's going to cause others to be killed. We do this all the time. We do this all the time that we kill Moser. So if we give over the Moser and Biyata Goyim to the non-Jews, in order to punish these people appropriately. So what is he saying? He's saying a Moser is so bad that we master him. That's what we do. Now, it's the Moser is handing people over to the government, and therefore his just deserts is we're going to master him to the government. What he's really saying is that we have a Moser who's acting improperly, who is giving over the Jews to those who are not going to treat them fairly. So we give over these individuals to those who we know are going to administer a proper punishment against them. And similarly, he says, Kol ha-meitzer l'tzibur, anybody who is a criminal, who is a public nuisance, u'mitzayr osan mutan l'masol b'yagoyim, you're allowed to hand over anybody who constitutes a public nuisance in the hands of the goyim, la'kosel y'asol l'konsol, v'mitzayr osan yakid osan l'masol. However, just for a person to protect himself individually, we should not give somebody over. So it's kind of interesting because the Rambam is basically saying that we're learning from the laws of Mesira itself when it's appropriate for us to maser. That you can maser a Moser, and you can maser somebody who is also a public nuisance. And it seems that we really have two different planes that we're dealing with. One is an illegitimate turning over, and one is a legitimate turning over. The legitimate turning over is an extension of what we spoke about, of Bezdin's responsibility to maintain law and order within our own society, and also Bezdin's responsibility to make sure that this governmental function of having a criminal system is properly carried out. And you might have people in society who are like, you know, mafiosos, who have some sort of an illegitimate enterprise and somebody's handing people over to the mafiosos. And the way in which you respond to that is that you take this individual who's handing somebody over to the mafiosos and you hand over that individual to a just government in order to impose a proper punishment. So it could be that it's not that all governments necessarily are automatically evil, right? Let's now focus for a moment on this notion of the government serving as an extension of the responsibility and the authority of the Bezdin. Let's turn to source Yud Beis 12 for a moment. The Ramah says, Yesham and the other mamuka mechaveru, somebody who is being physically assaulted by somebody else in the Jewish community, yachovelech likbo lipnei of the kochavim. They're allowed to go to the non-Jews. Abavishet degar and the makah hesigado, even though the assailant, the one who is committing the assault, is going to end up being punished very, very harshly. And he quotes in the Ramah Ram Mirosburg. Okay, now look at the Shaios Teshuvas of Ramah. Source Yud Gimel, he's talking about a case like this where somebody was being hit and physically assaulted by another, and he wanted to go to the civil courts. He wanted to go to the non-Jews, okay, in order to punish the offender. Look in the second line. He says that this dispensation on the Maharam is only applicable when the Bezdin is not able to administer punishment itself and to manage the situation on its own. So I remember, that's only if there's no Bezdin that is available in order to deal with this situation. Because then he doesn't have to run after a Bezdin when there is no Bezdin available. And then he's allowed to go in front of the non-Jews. But if you do have a Bezdin, then you're just doing your lahakis, the shavik hatera, the achli surah, because you're going in front of really the arkos when you should be dealing with the Bezdin. So what do we see from here? We see that really this dispensation is only a case where the Bezdin is not able to handle it on its own. The Bezdin can handle it on its own, then you're supposed to go to the Bezdin. That makes sense according to the Dvar Avraham when we say that this is really a function that Bezdin would normally carry out, except for a case where Bezdin doesn't have criminal jurisdiction. So then the local courts have that jurisdiction, and we say that in any case where there is a very pressing need, a person, for example, we're dealing with a public nuisance, we're dealing with somebody who's suffering physical harm, so then it's appropriate to utilize those avenues. Okay, now let's go to the Piskei Choshim. It's Rav Yeshaya Bloy, a recent posek who had his compilation of Choshim Mishpat laws. Source Yud Dalin. Hilchos Nezikin Perek Dalin in a footnote over here. So he says, Yeshomim Shiknas la Ovia Kukemel Kubakla Dina de Malchusa. Some say any kind of criminal penalty, if you violate the laws of the land, are considered to be within Dina de Malchusa. But near the Koshikem, Inye Hachos and Nezikin, and certainly if a person would otherwise be physically harmed. The Fiza Nerikisha Adam Mutkov, if you have a person who is being physically harmed, the Fiza Shesh of Shash Savir Shom in the Yod Mukov, or he has to preserve his physical safety, Koshikin Shesem, I am Labahago, Apila Kosa, somebody's threatening to kill him, so of course then you run to the courts and you get an order of protection. Then of course you're allowed to go to the courts. Even though the person is going to get punished, and you don't have to wait to go in front of Bezdin, because Bezdin probably will not have the same resources at its disposal to deal with the situation. Okay, good. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan makes a very important ha'ara. So why then does everybody think that Mesira is such a problem? Mesira is a big problem when you have somebody who is committing criminal offenses in the community. So that is a problem If you have a government, which is a corrupt government, which is like a mafia operation, which is interested in persecuting the Jews, says the Aruch HaShulchan, Yadua, the Chokore Yadua, Shibizmana Kama Medinos and Rachokos, then when we were dealing with faraway lands, not like this wonderful kingdom that I'm living in, namely Tsarist Russia, Lohaya Liish Bitachon Begufo Mamono, Yashodide Me'anasim, Avshinasu Leim Shem Misraka Yadua, even though they had the name of a government, they weren't real governments. Gamiyama Ezim Medinos Me Africa, and now he says even nowadays in the wild, you know, lands of Africa, Hashav Bechamash, the Shepakos Mamshola Osim, Tozaklo, you have these lowly kingdoms that are carrying out terrible travesties and injustices. However, the Altov, in contrast, Izako Maka Europa, but now that we have these wonderful just governments in Europe, like the Tsar of Russia, but he doesn't stop there. You would say that if he was only writing this to the census, he would have stopped there, but he went on and he spoke about the British kings. So he didn't have to mention the British Commonwealth. He was in Lithuania. He wasn't under the British Commonwealth. The rich people won't have to like hide their wealth because otherwise they'll get killed. That's really what all of the laws of Masira and the Gemara are talking about. That's when we say that a Moser is like a Rode if you're dealing with an unjust government as opposed to what we are talking about. So it's just Eliezer, Eliezer Yudah Waldenberg, source Tezayim, Kelek Yutestament and Base of Shuvas. He was asked about if you know that somebody like a teacher or a camp counselor is molesting children, are you allowed to turn them into the over to the government? So he says, yes, for sure, this is somebody who's a public. Yes, he says, for sure, this is like somebody who's a public nuisance. But he says, I have to add another point to this, which is he adds another nakuda. He says that turn to point number two. He says, Gamber Kol Shel Akum. First, he talks about when you're dealing with the state of Israel, that's not pertinent to our discussion right now. He says, but Gamber Kol Shel Akum, when you're dealing with the non-Jewish courts in these other nations, he says it's a big difference between whether I have oppressive kingdoms or free kingdoms. Like the Aruch HaShulchan, who has this distinction in which he says, all of these laws that are discussed in the Gemara become Medinas Arachokos. They're talking about like these faraway kingdoms where people had no security. Like, for example, Africa, Malshein, and Malkei Arupa. And then he adds this important point, because it happens to be a big debate within the Aruch HaShulchan. Was he writing this only for the censors? So he says, he wasn't writing this only for the censors. Because then he writes about the kingdoms of England, which were very far away from where he lived. He didn't have to write about that. That was gratuitous. So obviously he meant what he said. Now, not everybody subscribes to this, because some say that every single government in the world, this is kind of like another approach, every single government in the world can be presumed to be anti-Semitic, as you see from, you know, the vote in the United Nations today. Unless you're like in Honduras or Guatemala or some remote Pacific island, you have to assume that people really have it in for the Jews. So that's what Rav Ezra Batzri says. If you took Rav Ezra Batzri as a dayan in the Bezdin in Yerushalayim, and he says, I'm going to codify all of the laws of Mesira and assume that this applies, that you're not supposed to give over somebody, even if they committed a crime, to the local criminal authorities. Why? It says, don't think that these laws don't apply nowadays, because we have three countries, we have a democratria, and they have this wonderful shining light of democracy, nothing doing. That's what the naive people think. Before the Jews get sentenced to really, really long, you know, sentences. That when these democratic countries, whenever they have a reason to depart from their normal democratic principles, they don't hesitate to do so. Like if it's security measures, suddenly you have internment camps, suddenly you can relax, you Guantanamo Bay, you can relax, you know, some, what do you call it, what's that word for window...
window dressing.
No, not window dressing, help me out here. You know, that torture type of...
Waterboarding.
Okay? Anybody who takes a look will understand that even though they put on a nice edifice on the outside, a tzurah kitzonis might be mishtana different, but the essential reality, the Jews are treated, you know, that people are treated very, very harshly when they are arrested is no different. Many people are very, very severely oppressed. He's not even focusing on Jews being more severely oppressed than others, but he's saying that there is a very, very harsh and unreasonable punishment that sometimes arises from the criminal justice system. So he's assuming that it's always going to be suspect. So that is a very, very harsh, I mean, you could say it's almost maybe a cynical view that, you know, a person can take, but it really appears that from the poskim, that the poskim are certainly amenable to this notion that at least when a bezdin feels that a criminal needs to be punished and they don't have the wherewithal to do so, that they would look to the criminal authorities to carry that out. So the approach of Rav Ezra Batzri, to answer the question that was posed, I don't remember who asked the question earlier, about do you need the bezdin? Who asked that question? Do you need the bezdin to be involved in the first instance? Thank you. So he would seem to say yes, because it's only legitimate to utilize the government, to utilize the criminal courts of a government if there are serving specifically as an agent of a bezdin decree. If you took the Aruch HaShulchan is really more an extension of the Dvar Avraham principle. You need to have a criminal justice system in society, and if that's delegated to the Jewish leaders of a particular community, then they exercise it. But if they don't have that authority, so then it goes to the government. Now, of course, if you have a completely unjust government like those African countries that he was discussing, so then there's nothing to talk about, then you just have to figure out how to navigate it without them. However, if you have a basically just government in place, so then they're just serving, or they're just exercising, just like they have their right to impose taxes, they're just exercising their mishpat hamelucha, and that is not inherently problematic. Now, if you look at how Rav Moshe Feinstein dealt with this issue, this is in source Yud Ches. So Moshe Feinstein he had a few tshuvas about this. He has a question about whether a person is allowed to be a tax auditor, which he's mekel about, but very gingerly. So here he was asked about a butcher that was found to be selling the velos of trepos, okay? Get to the butcher, you know, situation. You have a criminal, a butcher, what's his criminal act? And he's selling the velos of trepos, and he is passing them off as a kosher. So are you allowed to turn him into the authorities? So he says, you know, I think that even though his sin is very, very great, this is the second paragraph, page 5, the end of his diety, even though his sin is very, very great, this person does not appear to be remorseful. Nonetheless, if you have not concluded that the dayanim of the Jewish community are incapable of dealing with this situation, then you should not hand the person over to the criminal system. And it gives the two different reasons. The first one is that in the that there's a problem of mesira that he assumes exists as almost an extension of the prohibition of going to secular courts in general. And he says that this is an isser of mesira, that you're not allowed to give people over to the government. So he assumes that even nowadays there's going to be a prohibition of mesira. He takes the approach of a batsri, basically, but he does say, but only when you see that the Dayanei Yisrael are not able to deal with it, then there is a heter. But first you have to see whether it's possible for the person to subscribe to the authority of their local bezdin, and only after that are you allowed to turn the person into the government. The second concern he has is that maybe it's going to lead to false oaths, a secondary, sort of ancillary concern. So where does Rav Moshe fall into our framework between the approach of what we call the Dvar Avraham approach, that really it's legitimate as long as you have a just government in place, and the what we'll call the Ezra Batzri approach, It's almost like an extension of simply saying, that it's only legitimate when the second criminal court is explicitly carrying out that which the Bezdin is prescribing. Difficult to tell. He's somewhere in the middle, because he basically doesn't say that we're going to prohibit it unless there's an explicit authorization from the Bezdin. He's just saying that first we have to see, is the Bezdin able to do it? Maybe the governmental authority should reside in the Bezdin, but only when the Bezdin's not able to do it, so then it gets bumped up into the civil court, the criminal court structure. Seems to be saying something along those lines, maybe an intermediate shita. Yes.
Chicago, for my time, the chicken Kiev thing.
Where there was a kosher chicken that was being sold, it was being purveyed as kosher, and it was really trade. So that's the type of thing. We have this type of thing. It does pop up from time to time. You may have noticed this type of thing. And the question is, what is the proper way to prosecute it? Yes.
Is it possible to say that Moshe was... might paskin differently if it was more physical in nature? It was more kuach nefesh. Guy was
sexual assault kind of case.
Yes, because then you could say, like the Pesach Choshen said, that there's an urgency involved. This is because of the fact there's an urgency, a person just has the right to protect themselves in an immediate, urgent situation. But Moshe, just, why do I say that I think Moshe is an intermediate view? Because if you look at Source 19, Moshe clearly held that there was legitimacy to having the criminal system in society. Hugh Carey was the governor of New York at the time, posed a shiloh to Moshe. You don't find this too often in the rabbinic literature that the local governor, the non-Jewish governor, turns to, the local Gadol Hador, a Jewish posek, to help him decide an issue of public policy. But here, Hugh Carey was trying to figure out whether he should support the death penalty in New York, and he turned to Moshe, and Moshe said, well, I'll try to, I really appreciate you turning to me. I have really, really very beautiful words of praise for him. Wow, you're approaching me. I'm so, honored and flattered. But he says that he goes through a whole thing about whether you require witnesses, you don't require witnesses, maybe you only require one witness, maybe you can rely on confessions, but you can't rely on circumstantial evidence. But then he says at the end that it doesn't really make a difference. Take a look at the third paragraph after the ellipsis. That's only when murder is not rampant. This was New York like in the 1970s or so. There was plenty of murder. If somebody just happened to commit an act of passion, that they committed murder, just it was an unusual occurrence, so we can have this discussion. But if there's a murder is rampant because people just don't care because life is cheap in their eyes, and you have just these angry, murderous thugs running around killing each other, and you have lots of murderers, so then you have the right to have this, to institute law and order, to impose the death penalty even when all the criteria haven't been strictly satisfied, in order to preserve the Medina. So clearly he held that there was legitimacy, not only to the Medina, but there was legitimacy to the criminal system within the Medina. So his shita simply must have been that the idea is that the Medina functions in this governmental capacity, but we really should exercise that governmental capacity to ourselves to the degree that we're able to. If it's completely beyond our jurisdiction, like for example, we can't put people in jail, if we're dealing with a sexual molester or something like that, so then you're right. Then it would seem, according to our motion, you go straight to the court. If it's something like there's a butcher, a crooked butcher in our community committing fraud, so that's something that technically maybe the Bezdin really could handle it, and doesn't necessarily have to go straight to the criminal authorities, even though it's a criminal offense, so then it's appropriate for us to deal with it. The last thing that I'll just conclude with, yes?
When he's talking about rampant crime, could you say that's really the concept of Rodef that he's using when he says they should impose the death penalty?
Well, it might be something else, which is the last thing that I want to discuss with, which is the Maram Shik. He was a famous Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, and the Maram Shik dealt with a very, what he called the Maise Bish, very unpleasant situation, where there was a man whose sister-in-law his brother was killed, and or his brother died very suddenly and suspiciously. The Issuchad shall Pesach, right? After Pesach, right? He just died very, very suspiciously. And the brother's wife, the sister-in-law of this individual, was a kind of a very, very, was a party in interest, shall we say, in the investigation. Certainly a suspect. It seems that she had a paramour, and the paramour also was reputed to have had maybe something to do with the sudden demise of the brother. It was a maisa bish, and the question was whether the community should get involved in handing over the sister-in-law to the governmental authorities, and whether that's a kimu viata rami kebecha. So he says, you know what? Independent of all the other considerations, there is this notion of a viata rami kebecha, and he quotes the Rashba and the Ritva on the Gemara in Baba Metzia that says, as we said, we brought our first, you know, idea that it, we need to preserve law and order in society. So there's also a notion of tikkun olam. Tikkun olam, that we have to make sure that people act properly within society. Some of the poskim who spoke about the right and the responsibility to hand over child molesters to the criminal authorities nowadays. When you know somebody is a child molester, use this concept. If you look, you know, at some of the contemporary poskim, they use this concept of tikkun olam. It's an idea of tikkun olam of just a viata rami kebecha. The person already murdered. I don't know if the person is necessarily going to murder again. But he still says there's a notion of viata rami kebecha in this type of case as well. He says also what he says, it's not just a question of mutter or usser, it's a question of this is the responsibility of the community. The only thing that he says, though, in the last paragraph, which is, you know, something you can question, he says maybe this is only Ladina, but maybe the Gedolei Yisrael, like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, were criticized of being involved. Maybe the Gedolei Yisrael should be involved. You should just have, like, other people be involved in this. It's, other people in the community want to hand over this individual who is suspected of murder, that's the right thing, because Yeshua Habib Poskim to smoke a lamb, right? A Poskim to rely upon. But the Gdol Yisrael should not be involved in this. I'll give you one Gadol, who is the Rav of my community growing up in Muncie, who felt that it was appropriate to get involved. It's the last source, famous case of People versus Drelach. There was a man who had confessed to Rabbi Moshe David Tendler that he had killed his wife. His wife was found murdered, and this man was sitting shiva because he lost his wife, but he was beginning, but he went to Rabbi Tendler for counsel, about, you know, maybe he has connections with a district attorney, because people were beginning to suspect him about this, and then he came out with a confession to Rabbi Tendler. He used that confession, and he told it over in court. The man was convicted of murder, and then the court, and the man appealed the conviction because he said that it was part of a clergy penitent confidential conversation, and the court concluded, no, it wasn't, because the rabbi wasn't acting in his capacity as spiritual advisor. He was acting just to, like, give secular advice about, you know, how to navigate the legal system in the local town, and the man, and the conviction was affirmed, it was sustained. But Tendler felt, clearly along the lines of the Maharam Shik, that there's a notion of Biata Rami Kebecha, that part of what we need to do in order to preserve the laws and order, and also the integrity within our society, is to hand over the murderers. Our Bati Din nowadays don't have the ability to punish the murderers, so therefore it was appropriate to hand the person over to the criminal authorities.
Is Tikkun Olam different than Dina D'Machlus Adina? A different source?
It is definitely a different source from our perspective, because Dina D'Machlus Adina talks about what gives the government the authority and the jurisdiction. Tikkun Olam is about why it is appropriate to hand people over, even when there might not otherwise be a chiyuv. You know, according to the governmental law, if you know somebody committed a crime, you don't always have to hand the person over. You're not necessarily in violation of Machlus Adina. But if it's a murderer, and you have a notion of Yata Rami Kebecha, so then there's the Tikkun Olam consideration to turn that into an obligation. Okay, we'll stop here.
Yeah.